All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geopolitics in Conflict show. Very excited. I don't know why I'm hyper this morning. I didn't have coffee, by the way.
Not
just
yet.
FYI for the record. So I'm just excited because of the topic. It's funny. I just had an interview in Washington, D.C. with an entity over there. And John, I used to talk to him. He was a former CIA. And he was this the Foreign Relations Committee in Congress.
Wow.
So I had a conversation with him. And he was, oh, believe it or not, we tackled one of these issues about NATO. So this is what we're going to be talking about to you. But not just from the military aspect. There is a lot of dimensions into this. And we'll show you some graphs and so forth to put things in perspective for you to understand that nothing happens in a vacuum when it comes down to geopolitics. So anyway, very excited to see you guys. Please type in where you are joining us from. Like I see Francis Tango. He says hi to you.
Hi
to me as well. So good to see you all, guys. Very, very excited. And so this is what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be addressing about where NATO is headed.
Yeah.
Well, we all know, because here is what mainstream media is not telling you, is that cracks and fragmentation exist from within the organization.
Yeah.
Despite what they're putting out there as far as we are united against Russians, and it's nothing but hypes.
Right.
You look at now, NATO is willing to put France under the bus.
So this to me is a very interesting topic because it really is highlighting the fact that the countries inside of NATO, you know, the narrative really wants you to believe that those countries are united in the front of Ukraine. But the reality is that they are not.
Yeah.
That every single country, number one, is suffering in some way because of what's happening in the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, right?
Yeah.
And so not only are they all suffering, but they all actually have their own agendas going on here. I think it was much easier. I am so riled up about this.
Yeah.
I think it was much easier at the very beginning to be like, well, we're all in this together. But as it's gone further and further, as we've entered into years of this conflict, every single country is in a different position.
Yeah. Well, that's why it was the statement from the beginning. You fight till the end, till the last Ukrainians. But here is the hard reality that is not being disclosed. Do you know that the front lines of Ukraine are crumbling as we speak? You know, and what this makes sense now is given what's taking place today. You know what's taking place today?
What?
Is the visit of Lavrov to China. He's in China.
Yeah.
And guess what? He met with President Xi.
Yep.
But that in itself should give you the message, guys.
Mm-hmm.
For a president, meet with the foreign minister.
Right.
You grant him the audience.
Right.
It shows you two things. One is that China is now willing to back down from supporting Russia.
Right.
And two is a reflection of the changes on the global geopolitical landscape that is moving into a multipolar order managed by those two countries. Of course, the U.S. will have to play a role into that, assuming it wants to play a peaceful role into this.
Yeah.
Because all this is coinciding with tomorrow, the visit of Fumio Kishida of Japan coming over to the U.S. And you know what they just announced a few days ago?
Mm.
That they're going to be conducting quadruple joint military exercises between Philippines, Japan, Australia, and the U.S.
Yep.
What the heck this for? Of course, this comes in a reaction to ASEAN statement.
Yep.
ASEAN statements that is pivoting from Washington into China. Like I always say, nothing happens in a vacuum. All those things.
You're absolutely right.
Now, for Europe and NATO, the cracks are becoming more visible.
Huge.
But there are two main things that we need to pay attention to. The first one is NATO stated now they want to allocate or collect or whatever way, $100 billion for the next 5 years.
Yep.
In support of Ukraine.
Yep. For the next five years, by the way.
Ukraine won't even make it to next year.
Five
they already
years.
Done. Did you know now that they are taking women
Yeah.
And I think building some centers where they're going to keep the kids. You're separating a kid from his mother or her mother. This is the horrible thing to do because they don't have any soldiers.
No, and I think that that's something people don't understand is Ukraine's a small country.
Yeah.
It's not like the United States where they have millions and millions and millions and millions of people to pull from.
Yeah.
They don't. And the amount of people who have died in this conflict on both sides, but on the Ukrainian side, you're absolutely right. They don't have infinite numbers of people to throw at this.
No, they don't. There are two main reasons. Also, that shows you where NATO is headed. Because you all know, guys, it's nothing new. NATO is a relic of the past. Simple as that. You know, you have two countries. You have the United States and Germany. Mm-hmm. What are they doing? They're sending troops.
Yeah.
The U.S. is sending troops. Our troops, they're going to be stationed in Lithuania. Mm-hmm. In Moldova, I'm sorry. Moldova, yeah. And the German soldiers will be in Lithuania.
Yeah.
You know. I visited Lithuania way back when I was still in Washington. I stayed in Vilnius. It's a laid-back town and all that stuff. But now it makes you wonder, and the Russians already made it clear, should those come over, we're going to consider this as a threat to our homeland, and we will take, guess what? And I put this in quotes because it's a very, very strategic wording. Mm. We will take the necessary security measures.
Yeah.
You go translate or interpret this any way you want, because what the Russian president meant by this is we will use deadly force should we choose to.
Of course.
And it's getting to that. And this is where now NATO is becoming this fragmented and it's chaos all over. But again, you guys been with us. How long we had the big channel, by the way?
3 years.
3 years. 3 years. You've been with us long enough. Yeah. So by now you developed that critical thinking to understand where is beneath
any
action. Yep. Because this is what we're going to get into with why you see in Europe where it is economically speaking.
Yep.
And why the U.S. pushed hard into ensuring that we're going to have to do whatever we need to do to prevent any rapprochement economically between Russia and Europe, especially Germany.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's dive into that for a second because, so also, guys, I'm thinking about having a segment where we do economic guests.
Oh,
What do you guys think of diving further and further into economics?
Yeah, please answer. Answer. Yeah, that's Elizabeth's background.
My degree is global business. And so that is, you're absolutely
right. Yeah.
So if you guys are interested in that, because to me, what I want to bring up next is just the wildest thing, but it is directly related to what has been going on and partially why I believe personally this has continued.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I am not an economist. I am just a very curious about economy person. So if you guys are interested in having more economic related content and especially guests, let me know in the chat. Okay. So do you want to see a really interesting chart?
Let's start with the chart first. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I like to see it.
Okay. So
charts tell you the story.
They tell you
if
the
you
story.
Know how to interpret.
You're absolutely
it.
Right. Okay. Let's start with this chart. Let me add it to the stage. Okay. We're going to start
what
with this
that?
Chart. So the thing that I want
by
to
the
talk-
way, by the way, sorry go ahead, to interrupt. Go ahead. Who created the chart?
Okay, so this is from Forbes, but there's a guy named Robert Rapier who I think is a very interesting he is an analyst on gas, oil, gas, liquefied natural gas.
Can we have him here?
Sure. I would love that.
Okay.
I'm not gonna show the ad on Forbes.
We don't
Rapier.
Endorse Forbes or whatever.
We don't
care for that
but
stuff.
But this is here, and I think Robert Rapier has done very interesting analysis in terms of what's happening in oil and gas. Because as we know from, unfortunately, many decades at this point, he or she who has the oil is he or she who has the power. So right now, I want to look at the liquefied natural gas exports up until 2022. So we have Qatar, we have Australia, and we have the United States. Yeah. And so I want to look at, so the big thing that happened in the United States at this point, when we have this like sort of this incline over here, is fracking. So fracking, natural gas was, there's a bunch of natural gas here in the United States.
Yeah.
And when they started fracking, number one, it was really bad for the environment.
Yeah.
But number two, we were able to export a lot more
of natural gas.
Okay. Yeah. What happened when Nord Stream 1 and 2
were attacked?
Rendered useless.
Useless.
Okay.
You know, surprisingly, we don't know how that happened.
I have no idea how that happened. Okay. Now I want to share this second chart with you. This is Europe.
Wow.
So this is from the EIA, so U.S. Energy Information Administration.
Yeah.
And this is March 22nd of last year. So take a look at Europe is actually the main destination for U.S. LNG in 2022.
Yeah.
Okay. So look at how much of it is actually exported to Europe versus how much of it is exported to Asia and the rest of the world. Okay. So why is that important? Russia was a big
oil supplier and gas.
Whether it was natural gas or whether it was oil,
they were both.
Absolutely, they were both. Yeah. Russia was a giant exporter to Europe. In fact, it was a very, very large percentage of their natural gas and also their oil were coming in from Russia. Now, what happened? The U.S. put sanctions on Russia, so that no longer, so sanctions, and then somehow magically the Nord Streams were
rendered
useless. Yeah. I don't know how that happened, but apparently that happened somehow, guys. Who stepped in? Who swooped in and was able to supply the EU, Europe, the Eurozone with LNG and then with oil and with crude specifically? The US apparently swooped in and did that. So very interestingly, the last year set records for US crude oil exports, and Europe was the top export destination with 1.8 million barrels a day. So the US sent 1.7 million to Asia and Oceania, but 1.8 million barrels a day to Europe.
Let's take a quick break. Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah. Well, that was the whole reason because, as a matter of fact, this was way back. If you have to go back in history, you have to go back to the time when Gerhard Schröder used to be the German chancellor.
Yeah.
And Gerhard Schröder has developed a good relationship with the Russians. Well, because he was looking for his country's economic advantage.
Yep.
And the economic advantage was in cheaper energy.
Yep.
Because any advancements for a country economically is tied to access to cheap energy.
This is
why two things in history. This is why Japan lost World War II.
Yep.
That's why it was defeated. And this is why China has advanced economically. And this is why now is advancing its naval assets to protect. We will be, by the way, releasing a video about
China's economy.
It's tied on many, many multifaceted aspects of it. And the point for the US and Europe, it was because we started to see that trend coming. And Europe, especially the EU, but mainly Germany's economy, was moving up.
Yes.
The companies here in the US were a little bit struggling. And that's when the conversation started as to how we're going to manipulate or how we're going
to ruin
this, whatever.
Right.
To the point that a few years ago, and I think when we started this channel, I recall there is a video out there. I don't remember the exact date. It was Russ and I when we did it.
Yeah.
And it was about when the U.S. threatened Germany with sanctions over Nord Stream.
Yep.
That's when it was. And right there, to me, at that time, it became clear to me, we are aiming at preventing.
Right.
And this is what you mentioned. I have a map, a satellite picture. Yeah. You want to see it?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
It is a satellite picture. The satellite picture, you know what it deals with?
Hmm.
This one has to do with the attack on Nord Stream 2 pipeline.
Yeah.
And it shows you where all the Norway played a role into this behind the scenes. So.
Yep.
So, and that was the whole reason we never wanted Germany get so close to Russia economically, because Europe was moving up. Anytime you hear the EU, who do you hear about?
It's Germany. Germany, because Germany was the largest economy, and it was growing.
That's
correct. Very strong. And very much of that was actually built on the fact that they were getting cheap, very cheap and gas from Russia. from Moscow.
I just heard from a German person this past weekend that now they're really dealing with there is, first of all, here is one thing that it's not disclosed here. Mm-hmm. Did you know that two countries in Europe now are in recession? Germany and the UK. They never disclosed this one.
No, they absolutely are not. And so actually, let me dive into Germany for a second, because the more or less the takedown of Germany has been, in terms of economics, has been substantial and very, very sad to watch. So first of all, I do want to note that the United States has become the world's largest liquefied natural gas exporter in 2023, with obviously Europe as its primary destination, which is what I just explained to you guys.
Yeah.
So that's huge. So it's not just that the Russian oil was taken out of the market. It's who replaced the Russian oil in the marketplace.
Market, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's something that's conveniently not talked about here.
I know.
Who replaced that? So if the Russian sanctions weren't in place, it would be cheap Russian oil and gas. And I will say that a lot of Europe was built on that cheap oil and gas.
And we're charging them 5 or 6 or 7 or even 8 times the price they were paying for.
So
that was by design.
Let me dive into Germany for a second, because you just brought up Germany. So most of Russia's gas was cut off to the EU. So there was an energy crisis, right? So 40% of the fuel that came from Moscow, 40% of the fuel came from Moscow, and all of a sudden that was gone. So it's interesting to watch Germany's economy right now. So Germany's population has unfortunately taken the brunt of this, right? It's never the government that takes the brunt of it. It's never the ultra wealthy. It's always the population that takes the brunt of it. So I want to talk about the growth in the Eurozone versus the growth from Russia.
Yeah.
So the economic growth, so the IMF, okay, the IMF.
International Monetary Fund
predicts an economic growth in the Eurozone of only 0.9% in 2024, in this year. Mm-hmm. Whereas Russia, they predict a 2.6% growth.
Despite the sanctions.
Yeah. So do sanctions work?
No, they don't. As a matter of fact, they now precipitated into that shift economically on a global level, especially when it comes down to the financial market. And we all know where gold is today, thanks to the sanctions and thanks to the changes.
Gold and Bitcoin.
Where the U.S. and NATO embarked on.
Yeah.
So. But here's the thing. And by the way, I'm seeing someone here from Czech Republic. Danielle Bauer. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
And someone else from Denmark. Martin from Denmark. So I miss Denmark because I went to Copenhagen way back in the day when it was still Scandinavian countries. Were very, very, now with Finland and Sweden in NATO, they dug a graveyard for themselves.
I love Europe. Yeah. I'm half Polish. Yeah. I love Europe. Yeah. I love Poland.
And here's the thing, before I forget, while we're talking about NATO.
Yeah.
Did you know there is a talk behind the scenes to establish military bases in Finland, on Finland soil. You know, which is very, but anyway, that's another a discussion on its own.
The big fear, David, I think for everybody is as the NATO countries are escalating this.
Yeah.
First of all, why?
Yeah.
And second of all, and I think that there's a really big discrepancy between the populations of most of these countries and their governments, because you are seeing mass protests all over Europe. You are seeing the population saying, what are we doing? What this is causing us to suffer.
Yeah.
Our prices of basic necessities are going
up.
Europe gets cold. Part of the United States gets very, very cold also. Yeah. But Europe gets cold. A lot of it gets very cold in the winter. And so you're starting to see, I think, a very big gap forming between the governments of countries, and not all of the countries, but the governments of countries and their people actually starting to speak out and saying, what are we actually doing here? What are we paying for?
The Germans are, I don't know about the British people yet, but still, Britain is sinking economically. They're just not disclosing this. I mean, you remember, I did mention this before. I'd be happy to repeat it again. I had a chance to read up, it was a leaked memo inside the Pentagon. I don't know if I shared this with you or not. But anyway.
What is it? And then I'll know.
It was recent for last about 3.5 months or 4 months. Okay. Anyway, it was leaked, you know, and it was intended to be circulated just within the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. And it was about the readiness of the British forces.
Oh,
and you know what it was? It says that if British, which by the way, this is the one pushing for this narrative about we're going to fight the Russians now. You know what that memo said?
What?
If British get involved in a one-to-one conflict with Russia, they will run out of ammo in one afternoon.
One afternoon.
And what the heck with Britain? It's just escalating. They can't afford it. Yeah. They cannot afford it. As a matter of fact, Russia will flatten London in no time before the British will respond. My point in all this, while NATO is pushing this narrative about we're going to have to defend Ukraine for what?
Yeah.
You know, Ukraine is done for. You know, now that you're looking at two main elements inside Russia, you know who they are? You're looking at Wagner and you're looking at Chechens.
Yeah.
They are joining forces. You know how fierce fighters the Chechens are?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Once they join, you know what they aim at? Is to take over Kharkiv.
Mm.
Once that's done, and Bakhmut, of course, once that's done, you will be looking at only a few miles from Kiev.
Yeah.
Once you do that, Ukraine becomes a landlocked anyway.
Yeah.
So, and now the arguments that they are saying, Ukraine and NATO saying, we could think about the Russians returning the territory. Ain't gonna happen. It's wishful thinking. It is not gonna happen because to Russia, they can't trust anymore.
No.
And they and for them, you will think they will learn from history.
Yeah.
Just go back to Georgia. What took place in Georgia? Did Russia return Abkhazia and South Ossetia? No.
No.
Mikhail Saakashvili, the former president, the idiot president, who was, by the way, educated here in the U.S., you know, had to live with the tail between his legs.
Yeah.
Because he was embarrassed beyond belief. You know why? Because he was defeated in a matter of 1 week and a half.
Yeah.
No. And this is why, you know, the fear of NATO, know what? The fear of NATO is not about Russia. It's not. The fear about NATO is from within that the population will rise up and say, hell with this. We're done with this one. This is where the fear inside NATO.
Yeah.
And that's why you see this coordination of controlling the narrative.
Yeah.
You know, that's to me straightforward. We even now seeing it in Brazil, which I was shocked to hear about what their Supreme Court judge is doing. Unbelievable. I read the note that Elon Musk sent about. Wanted now to sue Elon Musk and charge him with conspiracy or something like that. But anyway, this is where the problem in NATO realized now you can't defeat the Russians. It's a fact.
Well, and it's very interesting because it's like how many hundreds of billions of dollars have to be, because it's kind of embarrassing, don't you think? Like hundreds of billions of dollars have been spent, more is going to be spent, and Ukraine's not winning.
And now we just,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. And now we are allocating more financial aid.
Yeah.
You know, our esteemed Congress, or our corrupted Congress, you know what I will do with them as punishment.
I do know.
Yeah. What do you guys think? Am I wrong?
We will be on the next.
Yeah, I can't say it here, but please, please, please put in the chat box. Am I wrong in the punishment that those corrupted leaders deserve? And you know which one my preferred.
I we do. And if you guys don't know, for those of you who don't know what it is, we will be on the next platform, which we cannot name, but we will be on the next platform next after this. And if you don't know what platform that is, put it in the chat and somebody who does know respond. I love it when you guys talk. I see it.
Yeah, look at that. Chanel is saying after church. You're absolutely correct. Karakulak agrees with me. Uh-huh. That's the way I look at it. Well, it's not that I am heartless, because there are some who judge that way. No, it's a difference between a right and wrong. And especially when it comes down to public figures. Mm-hmm. Once you become a public figure, it's no longer about you. It's no longer about your interests. It's about the welfare of the constituents you're representing.
Right. But I will say this, I think fundamentally one of our biggest flaws is the fact that our government officials can take money from somebody else. So if you look at the way that our Congress is set up, who is paying them? So if they enter in being, you know, net worth, whatever it is, and they leave and their net worth is in the hundreds of millions of dollars, who is paying them? It's not us. It's not the people, right? And so whoever pays you is your boss, right? Like if you work at a company, whoever your boss is who pays you, right? Your allegiance is to who pays you. And so instead of having an environment where the only way that they're allowed to get money is by being paid by their constituents.
Yeah.
Because imagine that, right? Imagine you didn't get to be a 100 millionaire by being in Congress.
Yeah.
Imagine that. Imagine that you had to stick to your $100,000-something.
$150,000 for House of Representatives. $175,000 for senators.
See, let's say you had to stick to that salary.
Yeah.
To me, you would attract a different kind of person. Somebody who wasn't driven by money. Somebody who couldn't really be corrupted because there was no corruption to be had. Yeah. You would have a completely different type of person drawn to that job. Instead of looking at that job and saying, this is my ticket to being really, really obscenely wealthy, which is a different personality type that's drawn to that.
Now you see why I turned down I was approached to run for Congress, and I turned it down.
I will say this. I say this to you guys almost every time. You guys go be wealthy. Power is with the wealthy people who are resourced. If you cannot figure out whether you can eat for dinner or not, then you are not going to be able to focus on bringing good to people. You go be wealthy. You go be powerful. You guys are the ones that we need in power.
Let's get back to another point that we need to talk about, NATO. Given the statements by Emmanuel Macron, we're going to send the troops. It was pathetic.
Excuse me.
It was pathetic for him to even state something like that, because his 20,000 or whatever he's sending will be wiped out in no time.
I think it was Colonel McGregor. Yeah. It was either Colonel McGregor or Scott Ritter that said that he doesn't even have 20,000 troops to send. He's got like 7,000 troops.
Yeah, they don't have much.
I remember seeing that on an interview.
But my point for all that, why saying this? Thinking because they wanted to take the lead as far as we are the spokesperson for Europe. Because when you think about the Atlantic relations, you know who usually you hear? Germany, France, and UK. The rest of them. That's why I don't understand. 32 countries in NATO. What are they doing? What are they contributing? What are they bringing to the table?
Yeah. So, you know, Germany increased its military spending now for the first time to meet the NATO requirements.
Yeah.
It's interesting because you know who's calling for that? Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, because they're concerned.
That's interesting to me.
Well, that's why they went ahead and said we need to generate $100 billion for the next 5 years. Because yeah. they are concerned. They, NATO, mm-hmm. is concerned that if Trump wins the election, which yep. even with Trump himself is not qualified for the position anyway. There are no leaders in America. Let me put this flat out. I'm not going to vote for any because who are you going to vote for?
No, it's the illusion of choice. It's not really.
So it becomes the issue for France is because, you know, if you recall history, what did Charles de Gaulle? You all remember, you all know who Charles de Gaulle is, the former general. What did he do? He pulled that out of NATO. Mm-hmm. It's because he said, well, America doesn't live here. We live here.
Right.
And he was right.
Which is true. That is true.
So France now, they've been calling ever since for establishing a European security entity that is independently from the U.S. But it was nothing but hypes.
Well, who's going to fund it?
Well, that's why we fund
the United States. Who's going to fund it?
We're funding it so we can keep control.
Yeah.
And this is why you have over 30,000 troops in Germany.
Yeah.
What are we doing with 30,000 troops in Germany?
Right.
But to go back to my point about France, I think France realized the trajectory. It's not to its favor for one main reason.
Yeah.
You know what that reason is?
What?
Being kicked out of Africa with nothing.
Absolutely.
With nothing. And who
Due.
And who replaced it? Russia.
Yeah.
In Burkina Faso, in Niger, and Mali.
Yeah.
So, and France was taking advantage of the resources. We all know you all know about Africa and so forth.
I have a big problem with colonizing countries. Big
well,
problem.
Well, yeah, if you go and help and build the infrastructure, right. whatever, that's great.
But that's not colonizing, right? Colonizing is going in, taking whatever resources, whatever the population that was in it is like, you know, this is something that is interesting, but that gets forgotten often. Remember when history books used to say that Columbus discovered America? He discovered a continent where there were millions of people living on it.
Already here.
But don't worry, guys. He discovered it.
No, he didn't.
There were people here. Yeah. He took it from them.
Yeah. And the same arguments can be made about World War II. Mm. Here's a question for you guys. To those who know a little bit of history, you know about history. Who won World War II? Please type in the chat box. I would love to read this, your answer on this. Who truly won World War II?
Yeah.
It's because the books are just, you know, manipulated. Well,
I think it depends on what country you're in and whose textbook you're reading.
Yeah. Yeah, right there. Here's Kate Stone. You're Russia. Karakulak, Russia. Lucio Delgado, Russia. Alan Sin, Russia. Hamad Sidi, Soviet Union back then. YT, Russia, Kenneth, Russia, you guys got it. But the idea that the history books have been manipulated, you know, I used to teach, I teach government. And one of the books that I found out way back in history, when it comes down to the history of Texas, and you know what it was? Mm. It was manipulated because if you only know that the state of Texas belonged to Mexico, it was never American.
Yeah.
And those books were. And thank God for some honest professors. They went to the Capitol and requested that these books will not be published because it's falsifying historical record. Mm. And I was talking to I was talking to an individual who happened to be a professor of history and of Mexican descent and understands the ins and outs of it. And he and I would sit down and talk and all that. I mean, I was like, yeah, he can't be doing that. The same thing I'm saying here, guys. History tends to be manipulated when there is an opportunity for it. That's why you have to be aware of what you read, confirm, check out your stuff and all that. So
history is written by the winners, David.
Yeah, well, that's what happened in World War II, which wasn't right.
Yep.
What happened to what the Russians did? Yep. Yes, I know the history of Russia and Poland is not pretty.
It's pretty bad. It's
but let's really put the dots where they belong. Mm-hmm. If it weren't for the Russians getting involved, what would happen in Poland at that time with the Germans right there?
Absolutely.
Or even the U.S.? Will the U.S. even get involved?
And it does not excuse what they did later, okay?
No.
They did later. However, that is a reality. That is a fact. Yeah.
And this is now what I see. And again, you all know, guys, I think far ahead down the road. Mm-hmm. this is what I see coming to the Asia or the Pacific theater. This is what I see coming. And how that conflict is going to sort of be swirl in a way that is going to be manipulated and led on.
It is very interesting that, you know, David, you and I, you can't trust legacy media here.
No.
And it's interesting to look at the publications that are in Asia specifically about this conflict. They are shockingly more balanced. I'm not saying that they don't have their own air of agenda, but they are shockingly more balanced about this conflict.
Yeah. Well, I do read up on both ends of the Atlantic, on both sides of the Atlantic,
and
even in Asia. And I this is what I do for how I get my information is to read the analysis from different entities. But I do see how the Western one, how it's narrated and sort of to take you on a path that is not the right one as far as where the truth is. So, but this is just to go back to France. This is where the issue with France. France now is realized being kicked out of, as a matter of fact, believe it or not, I just read yesterday or the day before that now France is reaching out to Morocco. Mm-hmm. Why Morocco? It's because Morocco was a French colony.
Yep.
You know, they're reaching out to them after their relations get strained. Well, it's not because they care. It's because they are losing ground in Africa. Morocco, at least when it comes down to agriculture, Morocco is a good country when it comes down to produce, whatever. Mm-hmm. Morocco is number one in citrus in the world, whatever. Yeah. All the produce goes to Europe. Mm-hmm. And France was very concerned that now Morocco, because Morocco is moving a different direction altogether.
Where are they moving?
Moving in a sense of building up a pipeline with Nigeria. Where that's going to go. Look at about the relationship, because what France did regarding the Western Sahara and all that stuff, a touchy subject for Morocco at that point. But just to give you guys an idea, is that France is realizing now that is being thrown under the bus. Yeah. Even NATO don't care. And Stoltenberg. He doesn't give a damn about anybody because he's concerned about his position. He wants to stay in. There are two individuals that I was informed that those two have their eyes on the Secretary General of NATO. You know who they are? Mm. One of them is Mike Rutte of Netherlands. And you know who the other? Ursula von der Leyen. The liar.
Don't do it. Don't let her be it.
Yeah, no. Those are the two. But because here is how it works for NATO. The more you push for conflicts and as a secretary, the more you are accepted. And of course, we have a say into that because we control the budget.
Yeah.
And the military aspects of it is controlled by a four-star U.S. general.
Yeah.
Always. There will never be a British or French general or Turkish or whatever. It will always be U.S.
That's what I'm saying. Money equals power. You guys go be wealthy. Be the powerful people. I will say this until I am blue in the face.
Yeah. Well, it's the reality of it.
It's the reality.
Yeah. And this is where France now realizing that because their statements thinking that the NATO is going to come and support that statement by sending troops. There is no country in NATO that is willing now to send the troops to Ukraine.
Right.
Yeah, sending them to Lithuania or Moldova, or whatever. Yeah, we always do troops. And when I was in Vilnius, Lithuania, that is back then, there were some U.S. troops there, small portion, whatever. But as far as going to Ukraine, they will be wiped out.
Right.
I mean, you look at even production-wise. Did you know we're running into a problem right now in the U.S. regarding ammunition?
Oh, hugely. Okay, yes. That's really important.
It's because what do you need for the ammo? What do you need to produce that? You need gunpowder.
Yeah.
Where is gunpowder coming from? China. Yeah. And China stopping the supply.
Yeah.
It's stopping that.
And this is a huge thing. So when ammunition production here in the United States, Russia produces, I think it's like four times more. So like three or four times more ammunition. I had the numbers like a couple weeks ago, but basically it was like Russia was producing three or four times more ammunition than the U.S. was producing.
I'll give you one example also about tanks.
Yeah.
We produce, this is the last reading I did, we produce about one tank for almost, it takes us 100 days mm-hmm. to do that. You know how many Russia produces?
I don't know how many.
About 10.
Wow. In the same time frame?
Same time frame.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because tanks, they're a lot involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let alone the performance of.
Yeah.
I saw the images, which, by the way, wasn't disclosed here in the West. I didn't see them here.
Oh,
in the
of
West.
Those Leopard tanks that were.
That's lying. One. Even the Abram tanks. They were destroyed. And Russia now is putting in the field some advanced one because Russia's preparing. There's something big is going to be coming in about a month and a half or so. Why? Because we're moving into the end of spring, summer, the dry land. It's going to be now. And Russia's going to move forcefully and take care of whatever they take care of. NATO is realizing that if we bark so loud, we're going to scare the Russians. Turns out to be when you bark too loud, that means you're just barking. There is no... But also the conflict in Ukraine exposed the vulnerabilities of NATO as a whole. And makes me wonder, as an observer, as one watching from outside in, what are the 32 countries for?
Right.
What for? And especially when you have countries like Montenegro, part of NATO. You know, countries that...
It's a beautiful country.
Yeah, I have nothing against them. It's just what are they contributing to?
Well, I sort of think that that's like a show of numbers. Right.
So that's all it is.
Look at how big we are. We have all these countries that are involved.
Yeah.
But I will say it's the what we've heard actually out of Russia and out of China recently is that they know how bad things are here in the United States. And I think all of the major governments around the world are looking at the United States and asking, how long can this continue? How long can the U.S. sustain the way that it is? And so I think it's an interesting set of conversations coming up among world leaders.
Yeah.
Because in a sense, it's a matter of time. And I wish that that weren't true because we're on the ship. I always say this. We're on the sinking ship here in the United States. And if we can bail some water out and if we can keep it from sinking, fantastic. But our foreign policy and our domestic policy has been so bad over decades and decades now that the United States is in bad shape and everyone around the world can see it. And, you know, here at home, you know, Biden's coming out and he's like, well, we did it, guys. Our economy's great again. Can't you tell? Can't you guys tell how much I've done for the economy?
Yeah. It's sad. Fantastic. Very sad. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's its own showboating, right? That's its own.
But the idea,
you know,
to me, what saddens me the most is that you got a leader that is lying.
That's what saddens me. It's not even hard to go to the grocery store, right? Go into any big city. It is a lie. And so other countries are watching the problems that the United States has with immigration, with our education system, with inflation,
with healthcare.
They're watching our food be basically corrupted and sold out. Like they know that the stuff that's in a box of cereal here in the United States is different than in Europe. They know that it's different, right? Yeah. They know. And so it's like a matter of time. In a way, I think they're biding their time until the U.S. crumbles from the inside out. And how did Rome fall?
Exactly. From within.
From within. Yeah. Not from without. Yeah.
There is another point I want to mention here before we can later on answer a question or two.
Oh, yeah. We'll take a question.
But still another key point. Let me see here. Because funny, I was about to talk about it, and I mean it. It's from Martin. You put, David, can you maybe elaborate on the less known motives behind the Ukraine war, namely BlackRock?
Ooh.
Yeah, it is a good point. Yeah. And I was about to talk about it, but not that one. I was about, because I like to give credit where credit is due. But I was going to talk about nation buildings.
Yeah.
Nation building has always been one of the mantras. when we go in physically, and I remember the one in Iraq, the one in Afghanistan, we tried to do this in Asia as well. It was always about this one in Ukraine is slightly different because the arrangements have been made prior to this, that you flatten the country, you get in into nation building by having an entity like BlackRock get involved in it. We've done it before, but look, nothing gets built. I am here to tell you, nothing gets built. What gets done into that is the transfer of money. So the allocation, because you know what's going to happen with this? Nation building is going to be now an international conference down the road, donations for rebuilding. And nothing's going to be rebuilt. I saw with my own eyes in Iraq. I saw with my own eyes in Afghanistan when I was there.
Well, you know who's rebuilding Iraq?
China. Yeah, they are.
China. It's not the U.S.
Yeah, this is why back then when I was still there, the Iraqi government gave Chinese a contract in one of the oil fields. And we were livid. We were livid as to, you know why? Because the Iraqi government asked Exxon to leave. And we were like, what? They're like, So we the one who fought there. We the one who spent blood and money. But again, it was for the wrong reasons. We weren't supposed to be there to begin with.
There were no weapons of mass destruction, turns
out. And I argued. I really argued in one of the way back. Send the note that, sir, you do not want to go in. If you only know the history of that part of the world, let alone what you're going to do to the geopolitical landscape, is you're going to turn it upside down, paving the way for Iran, because you now eliminated another enemy at that time, because there was both Iraq and Afghanistan were at that time enemies of, of Iran. Then I said the changes on the geopolitical landscape is not going to bode well for the United States long term. You know what the answer I got? Oh, don't worry about it, Mr. O. We're going to go quick, liberate Baghdad and get out. I said, you go in, you are staying in for a minimum of 15 years, if not longer.
And quite frankly, what did liberate Baghdad mean?
I didn't mean anything.
You know what I mean? Liberate it from, to who? Who are you going to liberate it to? Give it to them? That's not.
And still today, you know, we still have our forces there that the Iraqi government has asked the U.S.
Need to leave. Absolutely.
It's their country. They can. And what are we doing there? What are we doing with the bases? This is one of the things that we always think. I know we are not just presenting the problems. There are solutions, and I'd be happy to talk about one right now.
Yes, please.
We'll talk about, for example, how you can manage the spending of the military for the U.S.
Fantastic.
Well, let's start with one. The first one will be eliminate the foreign bases, because 856 or 57 base, do the math calculations. It takes $1 million a month for electricity just to run this. So get that out, shut down, close doors, bring back the U.S. soldiers back home here, because soldiers are to defend the homeland, not to go to some far land. Second thing, once you do that, you're going to cut down from the spending budget of the Pentagon. Pentagon does not need to have an $860 billion spending. What for? Then you get that money. Is that rain?
It's rain.
Oh, guys, that's
it's dark in here because it is storming.
Storming. Well, as long as we still have connection here. Then the second thing, you take that money out and you allocate it in dealing with the crumbling infrastructure.
Oh, absolutely.
You start with that.
Yes.
A good infrastructure will allow the facilitation of transportation. Trucks will be to go in, deliver the goods. Everybody's working and so forth. The more you generate from that, because we pay taxes, even though under the law, we're not supposed to. There is nothing in the U.S. Constitution that says we have to pay taxes. But we pay it anyway. So you do that. Then you start to focus on the education system. How are you going to do that? Is by ensuring you have qualified teacher and you have a good curriculum.
And you pay them well. You take care of your teachers.
And this is where it all starts.
Yeah.
But to keep, you know, those are basic. The government knows. but they won't be willing to do it because the will of the people is not strong enough.
Yeah.
Till American people scream louder and descend to the streets peacefully. Ask for the immediate change. And among those, of course, I put a damn term limit on those members of Congress because corruption or...
Get rid of lobbyists.
Or do the punishment that I am suggesting on a Sunday afternoon after church, right there, near Congress. Line them up.
Yes. So. Well, and if you want to know what that is, we will be on the next platform in a few minutes after we end this. And if you don't know what platform that is, ask in the chat. And somebody who does know, please respond back to them.
Yeah. All right. Let's answer one question here or two, if they are okay, or we can answer them on the other platform. Whatever you guys want. What would you like?
Yeah. Let's answer maybe one here, and then we're going to switch over to the other platform.
Yeah.
You know, I think so. We have an interview with Gerald Celente, who is the founder of the Trends Journal, coming out on Thursday. It is very, very, very interesting. He's very strong in global economics because, like I said earlier, nothing happens without economics. My husband showed me a really funny video the other day, and it was a comedic video, and it was a guy talking about. You know, why do we have all these bases around the world? Well, okay. So to protect trade, right? To protect our trade interests, to protect trade routes, right? Like that's why we have these bases, is to protect our trade routes. Well, who is our biggest trading partner?
China.
So who are we protecting our trade routes from? China. Yeah. Why do we need to protect our trade routes with China from China?
We don't. You're right.
They have active interest in getting their goods to the United States. We have active interest in making sure they get here and that they get our goods. We don't need to defend that.
That's true. That is true.
Okay.
Let's see if there is one. If question from Timeline Dunkley, will North Korea be in BRICS soon? I don't see that happening yet. Mm-hmm. I don't see that. No. As a matter of fact, now that Russia lifted the sanctions on North Korea.
That's big deal. That's its own show and its own right.
But there are those who say, you'll get North Korea. That might end up being better than India.
You know, North Korea is a really interesting...
But it's very... North Korea is very different. You're talking about so very different. Very different as far as, you know, because you think about the economy. To me, it's always thinking in terms of what economic assets a country is going to bring.
Absolutely.
I know someone one time commented that I do not like India and I do not like Nigeria because I expressed... No, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the reality is what those countries are bringing to the table. And BRICS will have to be very careful moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, there are about 80 countries on the list now waiting. Right. You can't admit all the 80.
No.
Yes, I know. That means the whole global South, which will be a reflection of the new geopolitical order.
Right.
But it doesn't work that way. Because you do that, you create this chaos inside your credibility and your strength on the global stage, for which the organization block has emerged, will be defeated.
You're absolutely right.
That's the way I see it. Because here's the thing. To me, if I were advising BRICS, I'll say reach out right now to Indonesia and Malaysia and just start a conversation.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you admit it right away.
Well,
start a conversation.
Indonesia is a large economy. I mean, it's not China, right?
But in Asia, it means
in
a lot.
Asia, it is.
Yeah. You start with that. You start the conversation with North Koreans. Mm-hmm. You know, Argentina, we saw what happened. Now, I even heard that what's his name? The jokester, Malay.
Javier Malay,
is changing his position.
Well, he came in with a really
I know.
Position.
Now he's flipping because he saw the reality. But it's too late because the problem with all that is each time you have a new president, they can just flip quickly. Yeah. This is what I'm saying. BRICS will have to ensure that admitting countries, the likes of North Korea, which I am sure it will contribute to a degree, but on what capacity?
No, for sure.
Now, when it comes down to military stuff, North Korea can contribute to that.
Yeah.
But who's helping North Korea with that? China and Russia.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to think. What other
assets? Already in. You know what I mean?
Exactly. That's my point. So that's the way I see it.
Yeah.
If BRICS wants to play a global role on the economic stage, because we're talking about a global south here. We're talking about half of the world population.
Right.
We're talking about
more than that,
about 75%. But we're also talking about, can this compete with the EU, for example, or G20?
Yeah.
Well, I look at now where ASEAN is headed. I look at now where BRICS is headed. Yeah. But again, without that strength, when I say strength, I am referring to the ability to have your effective policies implemented the right time, the right place, with the right player.
Absolutely. I agree.
Other than that, BRICS will be just a name, but that's about
it. And I think that that's a good point, that BRICS kind of is in a precarious situation.
It is right now.
They really need to, BRICS is either going to become something
or not. Yeah.
And their choices right now are what will lead to it becoming something or not.
Yeah. And having a dead weight.
Yeah.
It's not gonna bode well.
Right. And the United States, yes, the United States is still strong, but you cannot stay a strong global power with so many problems domestically. Yeah. And it's interesting. Do you think, and we'll talk more about this on the next platform that we're about to be on, but I am curious as to what your opinion is, depending on what happens in the next election. I do not
personally, we're here in the US.
Here in the United States.
Yeah.
I do not personally see things getting better, regardless of who ends up.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's because president. It's the fundamentals. The fundamentals of what American system is all about are crumbling.
Yeah, that's crumbling. Absolutely.
That's why it doesn't matter who the president is, even if you got a good guy, hypothetically, which we don't have any. It's the structure of the system that is crumbling, and that you can't fix it with election. That has to be teared down and rebuilt. That's the way I see it. So while I'm thinking about it regarding BRICS, because it came to mind, I remember having a conversation with someone and mentioned to me, will Japan consider joining BRICS?
I cannot.
Believe it or not.
I cannot.
The same argument, the same question I was asked it, will Australia consider joining?
I cannot imagine.
But there is a problem with that.
Yeah.
You know, be on both sides of the fence, kind of trouble. Mm-hmm. Or troubling, that is. This is the same thing where India is. India is on both sides of the fence.
Right.
So that's why I don't see Japan and Australia right now.
Anyway, guys, we have a video with Gerald Celente coming up on Thursday. A brilliant, brilliant guy. He brings a lot of very good, I think, solutions, especially for the United States in terms of how to turn that ship around. But really great interview, guys. Check it out.
And I really like to support his cause.
I would too.
His cause is, and I'll be happy to play a part in it.
Yeah.
If he ever extend the invitation, whatever, I'll be happy to, because what he's thinking about is good. He's good not only just for the U.S., for a global peace.
For the global peace,
That's why I would love to.
I really resonate a lot with what he has to say. And it was actually really nice to interview him, because it made me feel like all of us are not alone.
Yeah.
That there are actually a lot of people here in the United States and around the world.
No, they are good people.
That really, really want peace and don't want to continue the cycle of war and the next empire and the next fall of the and continue the process. A lot of people don't want that anymore.
Yeah. So, all right, guys. Well, we hope to see you in about 5 or 10 minutes, whenever that time is. We'll be there soon, as soon as we're done here. And we thank you for being here. We thank you for your kind support. I know today we didn't wear the merchandise today.
We did not.
Yeah. But it's okay. We will do it next time. So anyway, we appreciate you and we look forward to seeing you soon. As always, prepare yourself for changing world order. Till next time. Bye-bye.